Hi, I'm Laura from Hudson at the Hudson Farmers Market. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM Hands-On Radio.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM thanks our volunteer programmers and their dedication to bringing interesting, exciting, engaging, and important programming to our airwaves. We thank all of our underwriters, one-time and monthly supporters, folks with WGXC bumper stickers on their cars, callers, interview guests, workshop participants, community partners, and listeners for their support. Without all of you, WGXC would not be what it is and where it is today. We invite you to join us in celebrating the station's accomplishments so far and all the exciting opportunities ahead for expanded community participation, education, and creative community radio. Make a one-time donation or commit to a monthly gift to show your investment in and support of our community. Visit wgxc.org/donate now to make your pledge.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Molly of Baltimore, Maryland. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
welcome to Missives to the Ether on WGXC ACRA, live from Catskill Studio. Thank you for being here and listening to listener-supported radio. How's it going? Happy Sunday. Yeah, it's a great Sunday. I'm really excited to be taping my first officials show. Thanks for all the support and excitement about this. And I'm super excited to introduce my guest, Matt Marble, to the show. Matt Marble is an artist, author, audio producer, and director of the much-beloved American Museum of Paramusicology. He creatively and through his historical research explores the intersections of art and metaphysics, which meant he was the perfect candidate to be on this show, and the intuitive disciplines they mutually employ. Matt is the author of Buddhist Bubblegum, Esotericism and the Creative Process of Arthur Russell, and the producer and host of Secret Sound, a podcast exploring the metaphysical biopics of American musicians, and The Hidden Present, an audio interview series exploring intuitive discipline and spiritual imagination. Additional works of his have been featured in the California Festival, Warp Records, and the Philosophical Research Society. They also publish a journal called the AMP Journal, and his music and visual art have been rooted in his own dreamwork divination practice, and has been featured as a solo art exhibition at Greensboro Project Space. And his most recent album of solo acoustic guitar music, The Living Mirror, was released by the UK label The Crystal Cabinet. Welcome, Matt, from Greensboro, North Carolina, to hang out with us. How are you?
Great to be here.
Where to begin? I guess I'm really interested in just starting with...
He's muted.
Matt, can you let us know how your day is going in Greensboro, North Carolina?
Yeah, the sun is shining after some significant rainfall. It's a beautiful day. Yeah.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. I wanted to start because we had a little pre-conversation kind of talking about tarot and kind of how it has a fit in kind of the archive that you create. I'd love for you maybe to talk a little bit about the American Museum of Paramusicology for anyone who might not be familiar with it.
Sure. Yeah, it's essentially a physical archive, as well as kind of a media vehicle where I, through journals and podcasts and books and however else I can, share the archive and the research related to it. But basically, I look at how artists and musicians in particular throughout American history have found creative agency in metaphysical philosophies, which are practical philosophies, applied philosophies, and how metaphysics itself, how these philosophies draw from sonic language and musical metaphor to teach and disseminate those teachings. So it's a very comparative approach. I look at lots of different traditions, and it's also like across all musical styles or beyond all styles. But to me, it's been part of the beauty of this work, and what I try to share is how creatively people engage these traditions, including the metaphysicians that teach these philosophies. But the artists and the metaphysicians both are creative participants in exploring these kind of symbolic interfaces that many artists are familiar with, tapping into intuitive insights, honing intuition, that kind of thing. And so tarot is one of many like divinatory traditions that artists have always drawn inspiration from. I mean, I'm thinking of a recent album by John Zorn, Meditations on the Tarot, right? There's numerous albums like this where people have drawn more explicit, you know, musical explorations of the tarot. So that's just one example of many of the things that I love to explore and share in relation to music and the creative process.
Mm-hmm. what does your research process look like? Just I'm curious. Or I mean, I'm sure it changes all the time, but
yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time just sifting through old periodicals, sifting through obscure books, rare books, and a lot of it is serendipitous. Like just recently, I'll oftentimes research when a book has the inscription of a former owner in it, or when a musical score is dedicated to someone, I'll research every name that's listed, and oftentimes that opens up a rabbit hole or makes me aware of something that I was ignorant of. And so I love those kinds of serendipitous aspects of the research.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens a lot because I really try to expose myself to that way of working.
You're kind of like left yourself open, like an open portal for it to come.
Absolutely. Yeah. Pretty wide open.
Yeah. I think something you had said that really has stayed with me, just kind of, you know, you had said to me in our pre-conversation about kind of thinking about the element of the irrational and the metaphysical, and I was curious about more about what you meant by that, because intrigued me.
I mean, I guess the simplest way to kind of talk about that is the difference between a sign and a symbol, right? A sign is like A equals A. It has a clear meaning, a fixed meaning that has a consensus, whereas a symbol is open to interpretation. There's a level of abstraction, a level of irrationality that's implicit in the symbol. If there wasn't that irrational element, which is dynamic, which is unfixed, right? Like mercury or water. If there wasn't that in the symbol, then it would just be reduced to a sign or would have no meaning at all. So, I mean, that's one reason I'm really drawn to symbolism and these kind of mediating practices and philosophies that we find inspiration in. And tarot is obviously just filled with that kind of symbolism. I mean, every detail of a tarot card, the color that something is, why there's an apple on a table, which way somebody's pointing their finger, everything has meaning, but it's open to interpretation. It's not fixed.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of love about the deck that I will read from today and tend to is the Modern Witch deck, which is a contemporary deck by the artist Lisa Stirl. But I really am attracted and equally, if not more so, intrigued by the artist's interpretations of taking kind of like a known, you know, symbolism, like something like the Rider-Waite language, for lack of a better word, and kind of making choices to interpolate and expand upon the meaning to kind of, you know, be more inclusive or just be more expansive philosophically to, you know, kind of inform a reading. So yeah, I definitely get that. And going back to speaking, I want to talk a little bit about your creative process because it's fascinating, and it's how I first came to know you is through just knowing you in the experimental music scene in Portland, Oregon, and then kind of coming to New York when you started working on the Arthur Russell work. And I have always known you as a dreamer, someone committed to kind of, you know, dedicated to that practice of dream work. And you have, you know, produced a lot of work kind of centered from there. And, you know, but, you know, there's not just one way to do it, which is another thing I love about this world. And so I'd love to hear you speak more about kind of what your dream work practice / ritual looks like or how it's evolved over the years and specifically to kind of like how it informs your music and your painting.
Yeah.
You can take one discipline down, not all of them.
Yeah, those salad days in Portland are very special to me. And that the work I was doing then when we were getting to know one another was still rooted in a kind of a geometric approach to music that I still use, and that's become a big part of my dream work. But that the faces of sound pieces, where we were doing these large group pieces and social geometries, people arranged in space, I used to have people ask me, like, are these occult symbols? And I was like, no, not at all, because I wasn't at all interested in that at the time.
And then people were disappointed and left.
Maybe. But I was interested in that kind of open symbolism, right? There was even, it was even more open at that time. But, you know, I've just always been drawn towards abstraction instead of, like, a lot of times the imagery is, like, really human-based in the human form. And so I've always been drawn towards geometry since I was a child. That my first art pieces were, like, nested geometries, and that's, I don't know why, but that has persisted. I remember talking with Pauline Oliveros about that, because that was, she also was kind of drawn to this geometric relationship to music across her life. But yeah, over the time, you know, I kind of opened up to more metaphysical perspectives through studying the Buddhism that inspired Arthur Russell, and then also had some kind of, you know, it was helpful that my life fell apart at a certain point, because it reduced me to something very fundamental, and kind of stripped away all of the distractions. And that's when the dream work, I mean, I used the dream work to really save my life, because I was spiraling out. Mm. And visual art became more of a presence at that time. And since then, I've just loved, and I always really have, the way that music, image, number, and word or idea just echo one another in this beautiful way. And so dream work has been a way to create, for myself anyway, a more holistic framework for my creative life, which is not always professionally based. It's just kind of like, I think I said in our talk last time, like, I need to eat dinner at night and I need to create, you know, during the day. It's a form of sustenance. It is a spiritual thing, but for me, that means fundamentally inspiration more than anything, and just staying inspired, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I really, it resonates with me thinking about kind of the thought that art making is sustenance. Making art is food. I want to play a song of yours.
Sure.
If you're cool with that.
I'm cool.
It's called Scintilla. Is that saying, am I saying it right?
Scintilla. Yeah.
Scintilla.
It's a scintilla, because
a
both
scintilla.
Sides of this record are mirrored. So it's kind of, there's a scintilla B and a scintilla A.
Gotcha. Okay. And this is off the record, The Living Mirror. And after that, we will read some tarot. How's that sound?
Great. Thank you.
That was Matt Marble's Scintilla from The Living Mirror. And now we're going to read some tarot, which I'm really excited about. Okay, so let me bust out the cards. So I already introduced the fact that I was reading from the Modern Witch Tarot deck by Lisa Stirl. And we've done some pre-planning, me and Matt. only so much, like, you know, the tarot, you know, we'll see what comes up spiritually in the reading. But the question that we are asking is, do you remember, Matt, or should I say?
Vaguely.
roughly, we're thinking about, for Matt, how to be in the material world, which I think, you know, when we got to this point, I was like, oh, this just feels like the kind of question I'm always going to be asking, which I think are just like, Carolee Schneeman used to always refer to like kind of this thing of like the art problem, but it was never like the practical, like, how do I get paint? It was like always like, you know, more of these like kind of deeper existential questions about like, how is this work? How is my art feeding me, and how do I feed the world with it? You know, and you know, when we say feed, we don't always mean money, but or that's usually never the question, really. But you know, the deeper kind of intentional, like, how do you find kind of your intention within the work when you feel lost and you're distracted by all these other things, is what I really mean to say. So do you have anything to add about kind of what this question means to you?
Well, I mean, one thing aside from just being like kind of self-interested inquiry, I'm thinking of, you know, I'm hoping it can be useful to other people too, but you know, we're in a period where materialism has become extremely problematic and artists are now familiar with the fact that they have to self-promote their work to even survive. And so there's this kind of urgency to monetize your passion, monetize your personality even, that has become very problematic. And I struggle with that personally, and I know a lot of other people do. So those were some kind of underlying things. But the majority of my work is ephemeral or virtual or digital. So a lot of what I do exists in this virtual space, and through social media as well. So that too kind of plays into the question.
How to be on these platforms, how to be on these stages of the corporatization of self.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. cool. All right, so I'm reading a traditional Celtic cross, and it's a bummer. I love that we can Zoom and I can talk to anybody in the world and do this, but the one... you know, one of the neg things is that you don't get to see the cards with me, so I will try
take pictures.
I can take pictures for sure. And if I was not afraid of upending the text setup with my phone being embalmed, I would take the picture right now. But I'll send it to you. I promise. So the core. So I do, it's a Celtic cross, which is essentially like a cross. And then I do like a four action kind of like, you know, steps into kind of the future present, whatever the future present says. Then we kind of do four cards to kind of see if we can get some more information about the energetic timber of the circumstances, or maybe some suggestions, to kind of, how to act, how to frame, how to kind of give some perspective on this kind of notion of futurity, and that's kind of essentially the spread. So the core center is you, Matt, as the protagonist of this journey, and then I always put a card across it because we're never this one thing at the same time or ever. So I just feel like it's more realistic. so for Four of Pentacles, I can show you the card. That's the beautiful thing about it. So I can show you this card. Can you see?
Okay.
She is really worried about money, like all the time. And that's kind of like her core kind of headspace. And usually when this card comes up, it's when I get it anyway, it usually tells me kind of like, yeah, this is taking over everything, and probably for very good reason, but you know, just acknowledge that that's kind of taken up your headspace from other things that you'd also like to think about. And you are crossed with the Three of Swords, which is a pretty intense card. You know, for listeners, Three of Swords, listeners who aren't familiar with the tarot, the Three of Swords is a heart with three swords stabbed into it. It is not playing around. And I think it's showing up here in this placement in the spread is speaking to kind of heartbreak, disappointment. You know, that could look like, you know, knowing that you're doing really good work and you know, you didn't get the grant anyway. You know, these are pretty kind of the dark side of like the artistic administration of life, is just kind of dealing with these disappointments. And, you know, kind of how do you find the resolve to keep on going when you know, as for the most part, these are impersonal rejections, but they are still rejections, and they can hinder, you know, ideas and concepts evolving if you don't have the other resources, any other resources to do so. You know, we all are creative beings, and we usually figure out a way, but, you know, there are other sacrifices along the way in that journey. And I think that's kind of what this is kind of playing out for me, is like kind of like the core reality. So this is where we are. On the top, I usually put one card on top and then one top on the bottom. The top card, and I do read reversals for those who are new to kind of thinking about tarot. You know, sometimes cards show up upside down. And, you know, some readers, I used to for a long time not bring in reversals, but I think that the nuance meanings within reversals are pretty important, or they have, you know, kind of just shown themselves to be really important to me. So I do bring them in. So I will be reading the reversals into this. You have two. So the above kind of our core sense of self, we have Temperance reversed, which can, in this placement, it's usually kind of how we are, what we're kind of giving off to the world, like the projected image of ourselves. It may be true, it may not be true. It's usually kind of just helpful as an insight to kind of understand maybe how we're being perceived or how our actions are being perceived. A reverse Temperance can mean, you know, kind of a semblance of like really attempting to kind of find balance with ease, not it can be on the other side of like kind of having a hard, the word that's coming up for me is a sobriety, but that doesn't have to be so literal, but it's more of you know, kind of just cutting the fat of like kind of what can be distracting or create more unnecessary chaos, and kind of being in a place where, you know, maybe life was chaotic, or it felt like it could equally just, you know, within the context of creative practice, just be like doing too many things at once and not doing them all very well because there's too many things going on. And kind of coming to a place, okay, like kind of like, oh, we've learned our lesson, or, you know, going far enough to kind of being like, how much sacrifice has one made to create a work without all the needed resources, and dealing with the affects of that. So that seems to be something that is visibly known, not just to you, but to those around you.
Mm-hmm.
Two of Pentacles. This is more of kind of the internal self, which can be known or not. And she's reversed too. I love her. She represents kind of, you know, holding it all together, kind of the counter self. And in some ways, I think is speaking to the fact that you are able to produce a great deal of high quality, interesting, expansive work, creating new discourses while creating your art and doing it all at once. And but also kind of feeling, and this is just the reversal coming into play, I think is saying that a burnout is you're managing that.
Good.
But, you know, it's a struggle.
Yeah. Always. A risk.
And you're not alone with this. This is why I think that there are many people listening that can relate to that for sure. Mm-hmm.
And you said the Two of Pentacles was upside down as well?
Yeah, and I think that's because, like, usually when she's upright, she's got it together.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying, like, the reversals are really important, you know, because they can be, like, a totally different message. But this, you know, the thing is, it's, like, kind of like, you know, If one gets into kind of, you know, I mean, that's like the beautiful thing about ritual and discipline in art making is that even when you're not feeling up to it, if you have kind of certain containers of, you know, certain times of day or like I'm just kind of going to get started, like, you know, it might be like whatever, like the most standard kind of the morning blogger kind of stuff of just like I put on a candle and I put on some music and I drink my tea and then I open the computer, I open the document or get painting or start mixing, you know, these processes in intrinsic to kind of like getting to actually art making can be kind of grounding forces to keep it moving, even if we're kind of feeling run down. Mm-hmm. And I think kind of like as one continues on, you know, you kind of find those practices within the practice to kind of keep you going when you don't feel like it, you know, and and I think that is something to be, and I think in some ways this kind of holding it all down thing is really where it's showing up here. I think is like you've got it in you, you know, and I think that's kind of what there's a confident, you know, there's something to be confident about, feel good about that, you know, but also, you know, just also being aware that, you know, two things can be true. You can also keep it moving and have it together to kind of just keep on showing up to the studio. But also it doesn't always feel good, but it's not because the work doesn't feel good. It's just because the other circumstances, that one could be battling.
Yeah. And regardless, something to be mindful of.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I think tarot can be just a mirror. But, like, I think you know this already, but sometimes it's nice to have it mirrored back to you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Pastness, which, you know, the past can be, you know, that can go as far as, like, yesterday, last week, 30 years ago. And you have the Eight of Cups, which is very much about kind of going on a journey. Usually when this card shows up for me, it usually means like, it's time to go. It's usually a firm, like, you know, it's kind of like, it's time to leave this job. It's time to leave this project. It's time to leave this town. It's time to whatever. So, but yours in the past and it's reversed. I think in a lot of ways, you know, you've had many chapters, and I think in some ways, for some reason, these various paths are with you and kind of thinking about the affects of them. I'm not sure if it's all, I don't get a sense of a negative or positive. It's just something to be aware of, you know, maybe in kind of thinking about how to go forward, be mindful of how much you're potentially romanticizing or comparing past phases as being superior to the now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, and we'll see when we get to the future, the message I'm getting is maybe think about how to bring that to the now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Just gleaning from the resources of your journeys to be more, you know, and kind of thinking about the question, actually. Yeah, like really kind of tapping into the various communities and spaces you've been in and shared your work and have responded to it, as opposed to thinking about, oh, it was so great to be in a community where everyone just got me and now I'm not there anymore and those were the perfect days. And then you start spiraling into thinking about kind of gentrification and how nothing good can happen anymore. And what would be more productive is maybe to reach out to some people and be like, hey, what are you doing right now? This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This past card is offering a suggestion. Yeah, good. So your future presence is, you're getting the Page of Swords, and she's awesome. She pretty much can just go for it and do anything. She's, you know, pages are young, like in the hierarchy of whatever that hierarchy is. You know, they're like kind of like the young interns. They got a lot of energy and they just like want to prove themselves. And you seem to be like want to go forward with that, like not with that like kind of naive sense of you're not, but, you know, just being like, let's go. Like, let's kind of make this more robust, more comprehensive, more sustainable, whatever the goal is, like you're ready to go for it. And, you know, we're just kind of want to think about how. And so this is where I'm kind of going to bring up my last four cards, which, you know, they do all have an excellent. Okay, so these all have individual meanings, but I like to kind of, for me, when I read the Celtic Cross, like, I like to kind of combine all the meanings together to kind of get a better sense of, like, what the vision could be for going forward.
Yeah.
But we'll go one by one and then kind of build from there. So first card, not surprisingly at all, is the Hierophant. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar? You shook your head like you might know what the Hierophant is.
I've seen that one before, yeah.
Yeah, and I love the Hierophant. And mostly because of, you know, going back to kind of thinking about the expansive understandings of where a card, or the meaning of what a card can be with another artist's turn on it. You know, traditionally in Rider-Waite, Hierophant represents the patriarchy, but like from a very specific kind of legacy of like church and kind of the role that church and kind of that sort of like social legislation can inform one's perspective. And but in my kind of, and then, and in, you know, it's hard, it's always an interesting thing when I read for people I know. So because like I know like your father was a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I know that your heart's with God. So so like I don't want to like kind of like
I'm
just
not
like
a Christian.
I don't want to drop it there and just leave it there. But like, you know, but I know it's like it's you, I know the influence of what his religious path has had on you and kind of leading you into your work too. Which I don't. I mean, the fact that this just came up means that I feel like it's in the swirl of all this. So maybe that's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
That there are lessons from him, but beyond that, you know, and I think that's the thing is like kind of like you are in a space to kind of expand on that core sense of spirituality and kind of giving to the world. And she's just saying like, yeah, this is what your work is. This is what your life purpose is. And before naming the card, I'm just going to say like this, the ongoing thing, and I'm seeing this like kind of just like in everything around you, the big thing I think is just like, you're just going to have to think about balance.
Yeah.
Balance is going to be crucial to kind of make the movements that you want to make. And really, keeping managing kind of like your negative self-talk, because going back once again, so the first card up is the Five of Cups.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, this is a person standing on the shore looking at the three empty cups that are spilled over and ignoring that the two, you know, because cups in tarot represents kind of like abundance. You know, our cup runneth over or not, yeah. Or sometimes they spill over and that's a bummer. And, but there are two cups behind her that are standing upright and full and she's totally ignoring them.
Yeah. And yeah, I definitely struggle with that.
Yeah. It's showing up. And I think that, you know, I think kind of like in thinking about, you know, it's really kind of reframing what is lost into like what can be gained,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not specifically within the cards, but just in a feeling. I'm getting a very strong feeling of it's a relational connection to kind of bring you out to whatever community, solidarity, support, resources. It's like kind of tapping into the community that you, communities, the relationships that you have been part of, and kind of reevaluating and kind of thinking about reframing to be expansive and not romanticizing the past.
Yeah.
That's a big one. And then the other thing, going back to, there's certain, you know, we're all nursing some heartbreak. Queen of Pentacles is your next one in your fall line. And she's great. She rules by tenderness. But she's reversed. And I think that going back to kind of being in touch and nurturing and tending to pain is kind of tending, this feels specific to me, is like tending to the pain where tenderness has been attacked, rejected, hurt, really kind of healing and kind of nurturing the spots where you felt like tenderness was the direction and having that be kind of tossed aside.
Mm-hmm.
And you do very sensitive, tender work. And so I think that going back to kind of thinking about allies, communities, that that tenderness can be protected and appreciated, and really leaning into that and kind of being mindful and discerning who you want to be in relation and collaboration with. I think, you know, intentionally kind of like acknowledging that, like, if I can't be soft here, then I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which all leads to my personal favorite card, which is your final card, the Star. And I love it when she shows up, and she's really all about, you know, the Star is, you know, how does one be a star? It's not just kind of being the shiniest one. The Star kind of, you know, as she's holding two pitchers and she is watering the ground while also kind of giving back to the source of water. And that's how she kind of maintains her star potential. For some reason with this card, it's a weird cliche, and you might get the reference or not, but this card always makes me think about Ginger Rogers. And there's like a kind of a cliche about, I was like, you knew Ginger Rogers was a star because she could dance backwards in heels. And I'm like, yeah, that is kind of insane. And I think the star energy makes me think about that. So I think it's just like kind of like you want to get to a place where you can dance backwards in heels.
I'm working on it, yeah.
Okay. You know, just baby steps. Show up to the studio every day. Yeah, so that's the full spread. Do you have any questions?
What made you decide to open up to interpreting the upside down cards?
Oh, you're going to ask me about tarot? I thought you wanted to know more about the spread, but okay. I just felt like I wanted to be more... I want the readings to be as authentic and be the message that needs to come out. And once I kind of started doing more research and kind of like reading what reversals could mean when they show up, I was like, oh, wow, that's actually, I read for myself and I pull a card every day. And I was just like, oh, that actually kind of makes more sense than this card being upright. And sometimes I would interpolate and be like, yeah, but I was like, kind of like, no, I'm kind of, I didn't feel like I was really kind of like giving over to kind of what the cards were giving me versus, trying to kind of take control. I wanted to kind of let go of that a little bit. And also because I do read with, you know, this kind of shared language, but I do definitely get messages too. And I'm always trying to kind of figure out how they're relating and kind of discern what is important information. And when I started reading reversals, I was like, oh, this is tracking with the voices in my head. And I was like, oh, okay, like that then. All right. So this reversal thing, there is something to that.
Well, yeah, I don't mean to deflect from the spread. There's a clear trajectory that kind of is outlined, which is interesting, and it definitely taps into a lot of aspects of my own experience. It's very vulnerating to have this done in public.
So
there's a little tenderness there.
Thank you for your bravery.
But yeah, very interesting. I mean, I'm definitely someone that has to like process these kinds of things. I have trouble responding to it so immediately.
No, you don't have to at all. I was just curious if you had, specific questions about like, can you tell me more about the Page of Swords or something like that? But if it's all connecting, then that's great.
Tracks. Yeah.
Amazing. Cool. Well, we've got about 10 minutes. So I'm going to play maybe a song. But I wanted to thank you, Matt, for doing this with me, my first official Missives to the Ether.
Great to see you again.
Good to see you too. And, you're listening to WGXC 90.7 in Accra. And before we leave, so how can people, find out more about the Museum of Paramusicology?
I'm always posting on social media, largely on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And the website is the main source.
American Museum of Paramusicology.com.
Or mattmarble.net/AMP. Yeah.
Okay. Just want to help people find your work.
Yeah, thank you.
fabulous. And I will be posting links on my Substack when I post this here as well. So, I figured we were going to talk more than not. And I love that. I'm going to make some choices and just say, like, we're going to play, because of Matt's work with Arthur Russell, like, it just felt like I got to play an Arthur Russell song. So I'm going to play one of my favorites, Being It, and we probably won't make time, but I'll play the rest of what I wanted to play next month. So thanks for listening. Welcome to Missives to the Ether, and I'll talk to you next month. Bye.
Thanks, Kat. Bye. Thank you.
Break out the phone, thinking I can make as many songs.